morning. My name is Michael McCusker. The sleaze weevil in chief, whose epidemical vileness is the pollution that mendaciously infects the heart and soul of democracy with his lying tongue and jackbooted incompetency, is being trumped by groups of Portland women who stand valiantly, vagina to scrotum, against the bullies sent into the city to unconstitutionally enforce national Nazism. The mothers of America versus a son of none who is bloviating into a mere dark stain on the side of a spot. Today's program is about a small radical newspaper that dared to be born twice, and its second death awaits resurrection. I wrote it and happily claim all responsibility. I call it The Eagle Has Landed. And I start with something James Alexander said in 1737. Freedom of speech is a principal pillar in a free government. When this support is taken away, the Constitution is dissolved and tyranny is erected on its ruins. On a summer Earth Day in the last half century of the previous millennium, on July 20th, 1969, Yankee Doodle Earthman rode a space eagle to Luna and declared it a magnificent desolation. 10 years later, on the same date, when gasoline shortages made it difficult for Americans to get home from work, a paper eagle emerged from a crypt and declared itself reborn. The resurrected eagle reawakened into a desolate landscape of its own. Instead of lifeless, this world swarmed with billions of busy beings, swarming like protozoa in a drop of water, bumping everywhere into each other. The reincarnated born-again bird made its re-entry into an eternal human civil war between worldlings who would enlarge freedoms of speech, thought, person, and psyche for everyone alive, and psychopathological raptors who would ablate all memory of such utopian heresy. The North Coast Times Eagle is Reborn, its first editorial proclaimed on July 20th, 1979, because First Amendment newspapers have become as rare as the nation's symbol, the bald eagle. The independent press has virtually disappeared, homogenized into the huge corporations that control the USA and probably the world, that editorial continued. In this age of the gargantuan systems, devotion to any principles other than the status quo seems quaint and naive and faintly dangerous. Yet the enormous pressures of population and economics threaten the substance of our lives. The glaring contradictions between freedom and property have finally reached us on this wild and stormy coast. Like everything else, the role of the press is in question. There should be no doubt. The press should never have any other special interest than the First Amendment. This becomes patently impossible when the press is controlled by corporations whose interests are in conflict with the Constitution. The great renegade journalist, A.J. Liebling, once famously said, "The press was free only to whomever owned one." The scatological father of the first North Coast Times Eagle was Robert Stanley Need, a flamboyant, richly articulate, editorially fearless, and once legendary figure, now barely remembered on the Oregon coast. His newspaper heated white hot for 5 remarkable years in the early 1970s. His idealistically unhinged form of liberation journalism made the Times Eagle a mouse whose bite made elephants roar. Absolutely nothing or anyone interfered with his obsession to challenge institutions and wealthy individuals he believed were obstructing or manipulating the will and freedoms of the people. He was a fiery environmentalist who fought against the Oregon coast becoming a Coney Island. There were times when he and his little Times Eagle acted out the morality drama of Horatius at the bridge, or the little Dutch boy who stuck his finger in a leaky dike. The original Bird was a good newspaper, irreverent and raffishly honest with the courage of an Androcles, seldom cowed by power brought against it, sustained by a revolving staff of itinerant idealists who stayed as long as they can endure hunger and scarce wages. The stories of Meade's attempts to keep the Times Eagle alive were legendary to the point of disbelief, schemes as often astonishingly complex as they were preposterous. He was always searching for angels. Somehow, during even the leanest years, the Times Eagle was printed every week, often a bare skeleton, and just as often a day or two late. Finally, the old Bird perished, wretchedly and in disgrace, terminally in debt. The Times Eagle lay defunct for 3 years, and nearly all evidence of its former existence was burned, bulldozed, lost, buried in libraries, forgotten in basements, or in the case of its former staff, scattered across the country and around the world. Its demise was unmourned by many, particularly those who dealt with it financially, perhaps also a few public officials, and others, treated critically in its pages, were pleased it was out of print. But here and there along the coast and tucked into the mountains were pockets of a contrary view, people who missed the paper and wished something like it would start up again. Robert Stanley Meade died somewhere on the East Coast in July 2005. He apparently worked for various publications, perhaps even rewrote a couple of novels he had earlier worked on, and he most likely played the piano that had taken up most of the house. He and his wife Lois lived in Wheeler, birthplace of the original North Coast Times Eagle. At this point, I interject a personal note. I was the next to last editor of the first Times Eagle. Robert Stanley Meade wrote a prophetic article of why the Times Eagle should exist. Then he phoned me in Portland, where I was ensconced, and said it was my turn in the eagle cage. Why me? The only real similarity between us was that we had both been military reporters in the Vietnam War. He for the Air Force, and I had been a jarhead journalist in the USMC. Both of us soured on the war and wrote about our disgust. When he called in 1974, I was freelancing for free to a few local anti-war rags, the Willamette Bridge and Portland Scribe among them. I was more or less present at the death of the Aboriginal Times Eagle. Perhaps because I was witness at the end of a great newspaper, I felt obliged to be its resurrectionist. I thought the Times Eagle died prematurely, like a murdered child. Its restless ghost caught up with me on the island of Guam and snapped me back like an overstretched umbilical cord 3 years later. I printed the first born-again Bird on July 20th, 1979. I was editor-publisher for 27 years, first in the Republic of Cannon Beach, then for nearly a quarter century in Astoria, the oldest city in the American West. For all that time, the Times Eagle did not make a nickel profit. I did not look for angels. I worked a plethora of low-wage jobs. I kept the Eagle's wings fluttering as a fry cook, burning burgers for the masses, pouring beer and wine in shoreside taverns, as a dish dog in local cafes, selling tickets at a museum and a movie theater, swabbing floors, cleaning toilets, hauling garbage, cleaning motel rooms, and chopping wood for tourist fireplaces. A journalist's life. The reborn Times Eagle was a bona fide member of the poverty press. The resurgent rag had a Dickensian sort of life, stops and starts. Rashes of publishing fervor followed by periods of aridity, generally due to frequent inability to pay for printing. The Times Eagle was, in retrospect, a truly cottage industry, everything but the actual printing done at home, typesetting, layout, and paste-up, usually done at tables and desks where furniture would normally be in a house. Each issue was labor-intensive, while print technology erupted into incredible new forms in pace with the computerization of the information revolution. The homemade Times Eagle was a craft-like production. The Times Eagle was one of a few micro-publications obsessed with a vision unaffected by commerce. Money might be the blood, but not the heart. Profit and loss are mechanical processes, like digestion. What mattered was that the Times Eagle not be a waste of paper and the trees it cost. In that regard, the Times Eagle mirrored a few earlier generations of independent newspaper publishing. It was descended from radical newspapers that blossomed briefly during the counterculture 1960s, back through the abolitionist anti-slavery journals a century earlier, threaded from the prickly press that fostered the First Amendment, which denies any and all interference with freedom of information, speech, or correspondence. Times Eagle contributors were most often its readers, and it sought to display or publish the works of local writers, poets, artists, and photographers, as well as reprint topical controversies from simpatico publications around the USA and wider world. The independent advocacy press of which the Times Eagle was a proud member has few pretensions toward objectivity and fewer illusions about its probability. Most small independent journals like the Times Eagle are chronically understaffed, underfunded, and generally misunderstood because they seldom reflect contemporary popular opinion. They are often in stormy opposition to the bland, hypocritical, or autocratic community rule and standards of their circulation areas. The fringe is most normally their chosen habitat. They act, often myopically and insensitively, as public consciences and torchbearers, and are fierce and shrill advocates for unequivocal causes, large and small. And they are usually on hard times and succumb more often than they are replaced. A common trait among peripheral media is to either revive from frequent near-death experiences or burn out totally. The Times Eagle was essentially a doom and gloom laden polemic that reflected the dismal and deadening. Yet, through dark funnels, history is better understood and reckoned with. Each era is a mirror of every other, and each adds to a vastly accumulating weight of an unstoppable lunge toward catastrophe. In a dark time, the eye begins to see, Theodore Rothke wrote, which flew on every front page flag of the resurrected Times Eagle. Readers understood the doom and gloom, and many thought its exposure necessary, but did not always regard its message with rapture. One reader asked if any good purpose was served if Times Eagle clientele were in such despair after reading an issue they considered suicide. It is exactly in perilous, uncertain times that plucky, spunky micromedia are most necessary. Such unshackled publications like Astoria's Hipfish, as well as independent, unaffiliated community broadcast media like KMUN, must continue bursting forth because they are not simply fringe agitprop, but are more cogently the recurrent revitalization of American media. And the more castrated and concentrated mainstream media become, the more necessary for small, local, self-reliant, non-centralized paper and broadcast media to flower. Robert Stanley Need, paterfamilias to the original North Coast Times Eagle, wrote in the aforementioned screed, "Should the Times Eagle exist?" The answer, of course, is no. There is no need for a Times Eagle when the other members of the coastal media reestablish priorities and face head-on the acute and dangerous problems in their own communities that are, in truth, contaminating the community next door, forming festers that affect the state and, in the end, poison the whole fabric of American society. The answer is, of course, no. There is no need for a Times Eagle when intelligence and love, consideration of others, and preservation of life-sustaining processes, rather than self-service, commercial greed, and the putrescence of political manipulation, are the accepted and normal criteria of postal life? The answer, of course, is no. There is no necessity for continued publication when the Times Eagle has achieved its holiest goal, that being its repeated obsession to find means to divert community thinking and endeavor back to what it considers the most important of the Declaration of Independence's inalienable rights, the pursuit of happiness. Then there will be no need for the North Coast Times Eagle. Since none of these goals have been obtained, there is no other recourse than to fight on and on. And that was Robert Stanley Meade. Moses Ash, who founded Folkway Records on a shoestring and seldom made a dime in 40 years, realized long ago that the very small can grow and relatively prosper in between the cracks and shadows of the mega big, like ferns on a forest floor. Mouses must roar, after all, and bite at the ankles of ponderous tyrannies if we are able to keep our heads and humor. And the North Coast Times Eagle will rise again. When a time capsule buried on Astoria's Coxcomb Hill, quite close to the tattooed column, will be exhumed in 2044 in honor of Clatsop County's bicentennial, a copy of the December 1994 Times Eagle is among the artifacts. And a poem by Carolyn Dunn, The Eagle and the Times. To light a match in a darkening wind, that's all he wanted to do, and let the community have its voice. Keep the condos at bay, and let real democracy have a chance. Did he do it? Is he doing it? Read the papers, article after article, year after year, lighting the match, keeping the mind open and the fist raised against prejudice, ignorance, intolerance, cruelty, and just plain existential pain. Is the wind still dark? Did one more decommissioned sub carry poison up the river? Did one more black suffer one more wrong? Are women still pushed around? Did one more child get beat up? Did one more tree fall under the saw? Then one more month has sleepless nights, and one more Times Eagle hits the press. And that was by Carolyn Dunn. She wrote it in the 1990s. And to continue on a similar subject, I was rummaging through a stack of scribble a few days ago and found a rant I wrote in response to the editor of a local newspaper who criticized KMUN journalism some years back. The editor asks, when is a KMUN reporter not a reporter? When he is working on a political cause. The editor can be forgiven for the singular masculine clause, as he was indeed writing about a male who had been quoted and identified as a KMUN reporter. The editor took exception to this identification. He writes, in the world of journalism, reporters spend a lot of time being careful about conflicts of interest, disclosing them when they exist, and staying away from compromising situations. The journalism quarterlies are full of such disclosures. And well, they should be. Defining journalism is slippery these days because the profession seems to be emerging from a long period of stagnant obsession with the impossible quest of objectivity, always questionable at best, a deceitful masquerade at its worst. Journalism is bursting out in a variety of directions. Some, like infotainment and simulated events, are unfortunate, but other spin-offs act as stimulants to the definition of journalism, and that includes active advocacy in response to theoretical objectivity. The staunch era of objectivity in reporting was never entirely successful. The rules were that personality was to be left out of reporting the facts of events. Human minds, however, are not autonomic. They are colored with the imagination and point of view, which is synonymous with point of reference. The pursuit of objectivity as the cornerstone of journalism was promulgated by such well-placed commentators as Walter Lippmann in the early years of the last century. The bad old days of reckless and unsavory partisanship of the press were declared over, and the era of just the facts, as Joe Friday used to say, was ushered in as the new form of journalism. editorial commentary was separated from straight reporting, in essence as well as in distinct sections or pages of newspapers, and later on broadcast news programs. Objectivity in reportage is a fine ideal, but human beings who record events, or as Gene Fowler used to say, journalists who shoot history on the wing, are creatures of their cultures, and their attempts at unbiased witness are yet shaped by conscious or unconscious prejudices and inculcated values. The insidious aspect of objectivity is that inevitably the form is used to disguise very partisan ideas and perspectives. The partisan press is at least open about what it represents and the axes it grinds. A reader knows exactly where the editors and reporters of an advocacy publication stand. In the bad old days, when the mainstream press was unabashedly partisan, readers were exposed to a vigorous variety of ideas and opinions. For all of its renowned excesses, prejudices, and hysteria, the partisan press was in thunderous opposition with itself, while under the rubric of objectivity, today's media cautiously imitates itself. The concept of objectivity might be considered a conspiracy of projecting a status quo, which is a particular way of viewing things, obviously a partisan operation, and disagreement with this agreed-upon fiction is dismissed as partisan or advocacy, which is, at present, the fringe of American journalism. Yet it is the fringe that is vigorously redefining the ideas, concepts, and purposes of journalism. The central purpose of informing presumes a consequence, an action or reaction regarding the information that is disseminated. The broadest definition of a reporter, therefore, is anyone who has something to report, whether or not they are schooled or employed in journalism. The objectivist editor criticizes KMUN reporters for actively participating or speaking out on public issues and wonders if KMUN is, quote, at bottom, equal parts political clubhouse and cultural entertainment center, unquote. KMUN is indeed a center for culture and political diversity, though it more generally entertains a liberal outlook on issues. Unlike commercial radio or television broadcasting, public or listener-sponsored stations take their public responsibility seriously and devote much airtime to public affairs. Though these often take a political slant, the very fact the issues are brought up begins a process of individual perspective, which is not served when issues are ignored because they are not particularly commercially viable or would displease advertisers, which is itself a rather unsavory realm of partisanship practiced by mainstream media. Many of KMUN's reporters are not journalistically trained. They are unpaid volunteers who take an active interest in the issues they report instead of acting as passive chroniclers. They are, it might be said, on the cutting edge of American journalism. Perhaps a worst-case scenario of objective-style journalism might be a defining endpoint. A reporter sees an automobile bearing down on a child. The reporter cannot interfere with actual events and attempt to save the child. The reporter must only witness and record. And now, July 20th was also the anniversary of Apollo 11. So I'd like to read a poem by Arthur Honeyman, which was written the following day on July 21st, 1969. Moonshot. Yesterday went beyond history, and I watched it while my mind couldn't fathom or accept or believe what my eyes saw. Everything seemed, looked like a stage, a science fiction stage, as the camera swung round and vistaed the miles of barren flat lands and the hills peaking in the distance and transmitted each image 240,000 miles to my eye receptors. Then came the spacesuits with voices from inside. Men they were supposed to be, men that I couldn't grasp or see, bouncing, floating like a robot, but really, they say, it was 1/6 gravity. Yesterday's events, my left-wing friends will say, were a waste of money, for man is too small to take care of Earth. Never mind littering or garbaging or cluttering the rest of the universe or even a piece of it. Much as they may be right, I'm all for space travel. But already I see man carrying his ego beyond the world. Yesterday he drove his prejudicial American flag into the soil, claiming peace and territory at the same time. Already he carries his colonial ambitions beyond the Earth's atmosphere in the spirit of Columbus or Admiral Byrd or modern-day presidents claiming for the United States its democratic, imperialistic idiosyncrasy. I'm all for space travel. I think it could be the salvation of man. Our world of overpopulation may force us to move on or destroy ourselves. But I pray to some God with some vague hope that there is such a God that yesterday's primitive performance of erecting American flags or Russian flags or Andorran flags symbolizing possession is never repeated again. But knowing man, knowing the U.S., it will be, and man will garbage the universe. Yesterday went beyond history, but man stayed primitive man. Yesterday, I don't believe what I saw, that man stood and walked on the moon, that he stood there and borrowed, probably forever, from the once awesome, silent sea of tranquility. And that was by Arthur Honeyman, Moonshot. And this is Michael McCusker. The plague is nearly upon all our houses. Stay safe. Protecting yourself protects everyone else. Don't leave your mask at home.
By yon bonny banks and by yon bonny braes, where the sun shines bright on Loch Lomond, where me and my true love would ever want to go, on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. Oh, you'll take the high road and I'll take the low road, and I'll be in Scotland afore ye, but me and my true love will never meet again on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. Spring, and in sunshine the waters are sleeping, but the broken heart will ken no second spring again, and the world does not know how we are greeting. Oh, you'll take the high road, and I'll take the I'll be in Scotland afore ye, but me and my true love will never meet again on the bonny, bonny.